You wake in the middle of the night alone in your apartment, and that feeling starts to set in that something is wrong. Realizing your home is no longer safe, you plan your escape, but he has other plans. The details are the kind that stay with you. Water running in an empty apartment, a locked door that shouldn't be locked, that uneasy feeling of being watched. That's the setup for Unhinged, the new immersive game experience on Netflix. Your phone becomes your controller, flashlight, and lifeline to your best friend. As the attacker in your building closes in, the phone in your hand will ring. The question is, will you answer? Play now, only on Netflix.
There are people you are told to trust. Lawyers, teachers, especially doctors. But what happens when you put your life in someone's hands and they betray you? The hit podcast Dr. Death is back, and this season is unlike any other. Dr. Death the Cowboy is the story of a charming neurosurgeon who rode into Western towns selling a persona of confidence and care. He wore cowboy boots in the operating room and became sought after by patients he promised to heal. Instead, he left a trail of broken bodies. This season is about a doctor who was never truly held accountable for the patients whose lives he ruined. A story of greed, betrayal, and a fight for justice that will leave you questioning who to trust. Listen to Dr. Death the Cowboy wherever you get your podcasts, or binge the entire series right now only with Audible.
This episode contains graphic audio and references to self-harm and family violence. Please listen with care.
I think that she is contemplating how to murder her family that night.
And she wants to do that for what purpose?
The sole purpose of greed, money.
When Detective Brian Byerson first walked through the crime scene on Dean Drive in McLean, Virginia, he saw a macabre jigsaw puzzle, and he wasn't yet sure how the bloody pieces fit together. But now, nearly 16 months after the shootings, he was ready to make an arrest. Detective Byerson told me he believed Megan started plotting the murders after her first failed attempt to wire money from her mother's account. And it may have all come down to, as strange as it may seem, her mother's cell phone.
That's how petty this whole thing is. She knows that she has to have her mother's cell phone because she has to answer that phone. And she has to regurgitate a security number that they're going to give her on that cell phone. And in order for her to get that phone, she's going to have to kill her mom.
That petty.
That petty.
But what about Helen? What motivated Megan to also shoot her youngest sister? Perhaps it was to eliminate a witness, even if it was her own flesh and blood.
I think Helen knew what happened. I mean, I will never understand, I don't think, in any capacity, why it is that Megan went upstairs and told her that she had shot their mother. I have no idea why she did that. I can only assume that at some point after telling her that, she realized that was probably not a great idea and realized that the only way out for her was to stage this scene as if Helen had killed Pamela and then took her own life so she could just walk away and she'd get the money, as she thought, and then everybody would just blame Helen.
Two lives, a sister, a mother, a family destroyed to buy a house.
All for a house.
In fact, when Megan finally went on trial in 2022, that's the story prosecutors planned to tell. The eldest of three daughters wanted her mother to buy her a house. When she didn't get her way, she chose to kill her mother, then kill and frame her youngest sister.
It's just an immeasurable grief and tragedy all the way around.
Megan's defense team embraced the theory that Helen was most likely the murderer. They said there was a way she could have killed herself with that long rifle, using her foot In fact, an expert for the prosecution had given Megan's lawyers an opening.
It's possible for a person to use their toe to engage the trigger. That is certainly possible.
And that claim would change the course of the trial. I'm Peter Van Sant. From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Episode 5, Toe on the Trigger.
I've never seen a case like this.
And how would you characterize it?
Particularly deliberate, willful, and cruel.
Tyler Bazilla served as lead prosecutor on Megan Hargan's case.
This is an individual who murdered two of her closest family members for money and for no other reason.
Bazilla and his co-counsel plan to tell the jury the story of a calculating killer.
I'm telling them the facts and showing them that we're going to demonstrate over the next several weeks that every shred of evidence shows that Megan Hargan was the one who committed these murders, and she did it for greed. And it's not Helen Hargan. Helen Hargan was an innocent 24-year-old girl having a normal day.
The prosecution laid out how it believes Megan murdered Helen, then showed how it believes Megan tried to frame her sister as the killer.
There was no evidence that Helen had done any of those things, and all the evidence was that Megan did.
Remember, to make police think Helen was suicidal, Megan had said Helen was depressed and under the spell of a bad boyfriend. She had also given officers a motive for murder, that Helen was angry with her mom for canceling a contract on a new house in Aldi, Virginia. But prosecutors asserted that none of it was true. It was all just a smokescreen.
There was no evidence that the house was being canceled. In fact, they had an appointment for 2 days later to go meet with the blinds guy. When you talk to the real estate agent, the real estate agent says there's a whole process you have to go through to stop the purchase of a house. They had never once initiated that.
Prosecutors also countered Megan's character attacks on Helen and her boyfriend, Carlos Gutierrez.
There was no evidence of drugs whatsoever. There was no evidence that Carlos was bad to Helen. If anything, he seemed like a very loving guy.
Carlos played a key role at the trial, testifying for the prosecution.
He was very emotional, even before he walked in the courtroom. He was emotional during his entire testimony, especially when he had to talk about Helen. This is not something he has gotten over him. It's just stuck with him.
While the court did not release audio, we have reviewed court transcripts, and 48 Hours producers attended some of the trial. Carlos was emphatic that Helen was not suicidal, not when he spoke to her the morning she died, not ever.
She was not a person that was plotting a murder or thinking her life was ready to kill herself.
Carlos said that Helen was scared and that she told him Megan confessed the unthinkable, shooting the woman who gave her life and loving support in cold blood.
He's an eyewitness without his eyes, but through his ears, and he was sort of there through Helen's words.
Whitney Gregory was co-counsel for the prosecution. She said that Carlos was genuinely heartbroken on the stand.
The intangibles of him just crying, staring down Megan, there's no way he was acting. And just that raw emotion showed that there is no way that Helen could have done this.
Carlos's emotional testimony was followed by another compelling witness. After initially defending her sister Megan, Ashley Hargan agreed to testify against her for the prosecution. She was the middle sister by birth and caught in the middle by this tragedy between two sisters she had always loved.
Ashley presents herself very stoically. She's very strong, independent, but she's grieving in a way that none of us have ever experienced. And I think because she comes off so stoically, people may think she's not as upset as she really is.
Adding to the stress of her testimony was the fact that Ashley was pregnant with her first child.
When she testified, she was 8, almost 9 months pregnant, and she kept her composure.
With one exception.
She got very teary-eyed when I showed her an autopsy photo of her mom and sister, but she's grieving like anyone would.
So for Ashley Hargan, one day she's having lunch with mom and her niece and getting Snapchats from her sister. And the next day her entire family is either murdered or suspected of murder. So, I mean, she lost everything in a day.
At trial, Ashley strongly defended her sister Helen. But as you'll recall, back when she was initially interviewed by Detective Brian Byerson, Ashley suggested Helen might have been the killer. Prosecutors said that Ashley had been in shock and was simply parroting what she had been told by her big sister.
Megan, out of all the family members, is the only one that ever suggests Helen did this because mom was going to pull the house. No one in the rest of the family had ever heard that. They never even suggested it. It's important because...
And Helen always talked to her sister Ashley, and Ashley would have known this.
Ashley would have absolutely known it. Yeah, because Ashley was close with Pam.
Pamela was actually visiting Ashley the day before the murders.
She was around when Capital One called and said, hey, someone tried to take all this money out of your account. Ashley knew that all the stuff Megan's saying is not true.
In cross-examination, the defense attacked Ashley's credibility, accusing her of lying out of self-interest. They claimed Ashley wanted the money from Pamela's estate all to herself. And if Megan took the fall, Ashley would inherit millions.
She has to grieve the loss of her family, grapple with the fact that her sister is a murderer, and then be targeted for somehow wanting all this estate, and that's why she's blaming Megan.
But it turns out Ashley had a very good reason for her change of heart. According to the prosecution, she had listened to the Capital One calls of Megan impersonating their mother.
She knew 100% through the evidence and in her gut that Megan is the killer. So she testified for us, testified factually, and I think it was very powerful for the jury to see that Ashley believed in her heart and through the evidence that Megan did this heinous act.
Let's be honest, traditional banks have a habit of hitting you with overdraft and monthly fees, and those costs can really add up when you're just trying to manage your own money. But Chime is changing the way people bank. They offer the most rewarding, fee-free banking built for you, not the 1%. Chime has thousands of fee-free ATMs because you shouldn't pay to access your own money. And Chime members can benefit from up to $1,150 in annual rewards, completely fee-free. You'll get 5% cash back on your Chime card in a category of choice like gas or groceries, and savings that grow faster than a 3.75 APY. My younger self could have seriously benefited from all that. Plus, Chime is rated 5 stars by USA Today for customer service. I'm talking real humans, 24/7. Chime is not just smarter banking, it is the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. Head to chime.com/48hours. That is chime.com/48hours. It only takes a few minutes to sign up.
Chime is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services for MyPay and Chime card provided by Chime's bank partners. Optional products and services may have fees or charges. Stated annual percentage yield and cash back for Chime Prime only. No minimum balance required. Checking account ranking based on a J.D. Power survey published October 20, 2025. For more information on APY rates, MyPay, SpotMe, and travel perks, go to chime.com/disclosures.
Instacart is designed to make life easier and give you time to focus on what matters most. It connects you to thousands of stores across the United States, allowing you to shop from your favorite spots with just a few taps. Whether you're prepping for a backyard barbecue, planning a summer beach day, or handling a last-minute hosting emergency, delivery through Instacart lightens your load. You can order online or via the easy-to-use app to have quality items carefully selected and ready for pickup or at your door in as fast as 30 minutes. One of my favorite things about summer is all the fresh produce. My family can't get enough watermelon, sweet corn, and heirloom tomatoes this time of year. But our favorite foods are only at their best for a short window. With Instacart, you can get peak season flavor delivered fast. And shoppers care about getting your order right, so you can be confident that you're getting the best quality items every time. Instacart brings convenience, quality, and ease right to your door so you can focus on what matters most. Download the Instacart app now and get groceries just how you like.
When Ashley Hargan was on the stand, Megan's defense attorneys played her recordings of what she previously told police, long before she knew the facts of the case.
When was the last time that Helen had ever talked about hurting herself?
With me, it was probably last year, I want to say.
This call between Ashley and Detective Brian Byerson was recorded 5 days after the killings.
Did you know that there was, your mom was financially supporting the buying of the house with Megan?
I knew that she was...
Not afterwards, but...
Right, I knew, since all this happened. Right. I knew that she was going to be helping them with purchasing a house, yes.
Okay, and yes. She'd agreed with all that.
Mm-hmm.
In this conversation, before she heard the Capital One calls, Ashley backed up Megan's story.
You didn't know how much your mom was giving her, but you knew that she was helping her out, right?
For the house.
For the house.
Yes.
However, on the stand, Ashley claimed to not recall these conversations. 48 Hours consultant and criminal defense expert Matt Troiano reviewed her testimony.
So it's my understanding, Peter, that during Ashley's cross-examination, she says 150 times thereabouts that she doesn't remember certain things.
And that's a lot of times to forget what you said.
There's two ways to look at that. Number one is that she doesn't remember, right? Number two is that she doesn't want to say things that are not helpful for the prosecution, that she has an interest, vested interest, financial interest, emotional interest in protecting her mother and her sister Helen, and that she is not going to be cooperative.
The defense tried to use Ashley's memory lapses in their favor. All they needed to do was sow doubt that Megan was the killer.
It's not the job of the jury to answer the question of who did it. The job of the jury is to determine if the state, the prosecution, has proven the case beyond a reasonable doubt.
And Megan's lawyers zeroed in on other curious, some might say baffling facts. Remember, Helen didn't try to escape the Hargan home, even after her mother had been shot and her sister had confessed to the killing. Helen didn't even call 911. And Carlos testified that she also asked him not to report anything. Here's Matt Troiano again.
She actually says, don't call 911, as I understand it. The question is why? Why would that ever be reasonable? What is the reasonable explanation for Helen to not want to get help?
I asked Detective Byerson that same question.
That is one of the pieces to the puzzle that we'll never have. We don't know why she didn't call 911. We don't know why she didn't leave.
But Prosecutor Whitney Gregory offered a potential answer. Perhaps Helen was trying to protect Molly, Megan's daughter.
I think it could be survival mentality. She believes that Molly's in the other room. If Megan's capable of killing her own mother, who else is she capable of killing in the home? So I think in part it's just she couldn't wrap her head around what happened, and also, too, just trying to protect herself and other survivors in the household.
But Helen at this point is not a 12-year-old. She's a university graduate, two degrees, a very bright woman. And she tells Carlos, I can hear my mother gurgling downstairs. And she doesn't call 911 to get medical help for her mom? That makes no sense.
She also is in the home with a crazed maniac with a gun. And so I think she's barricading herself in a bathroom. She doesn't know what to do. She panics.
Prosecutors hope to convince jurors how the crime scene clearly indicated Megan killed Helen, that Helen didn't pull the trigger herself. But then the trial took an unexpected turn. A witness for the prosecution conceded there was one possible way Helen could have taken her own life. Matt Troiano said the defense saw an opening.
The critical question is, could it have been done? If it is impossible to do it, that's one thing. If it is implausible, That's a different thing.
This time of year, I want more energy, not more steps in my wellness routines. Grüns can make keeping on top of wellness habits easy because it's literally just one daily pack of gummies, no bottles to track, and no powders to mix. Grüns are a convenient, comprehensive formula in one delicious daily pack of gummy bears. This isn't a standard multivitamin, a simple greens gummy, or a basic prebiotic. It's all of those things combined and then some at a fraction of the price of individual supplements. And bonus, it tastes great. Grüns provides a full daily pack of gummies because you simply can't fit the immense amount of whole food nutrients Grüns does into just one single gummy. Plus, it makes taking daily nutrition a fun, rewarding treat rather than a chore. And each pack includes 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is 3 times the amount of dietary fiber compared to the leading greens powders. Grüns ingredients are also backed by over 35,000 research publications. Save up to 52% off with code HOURS at grüns.co. That's code HOURS at GRUNS.co. Can you believe our country is turning 250? When it comes to furniture worthy of America's 250th birthday, Bob's has the styles all Americans want at the everyday low prices we deserve. Plus, everything is backed by glowing 5-star reviews from real customers. For ultimate relaxation, check out the Sedona Power Reclining Sofa. It's a genuine leather dream with built-in charging and Bob-opedic seats made for chilling in the AC all day. You can even grab the matching love seat and recliner. If you're hosting summer parties, the Homeworks dining set is a must-have, offering comfy Bob-opedic seating and hidden storage in both the table and bench. For maximum flexibility, the modular Bob sectional is a customer favorite with over 1,000 five-star reviews. It features family-proof construction, wireless charging, and Bob-opedic memory foam for hundreds less than competitors. It's just $250 per piece. It's a total steal. Celebrate the 4th at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
In the second week of the trial, the prosecution and defense focused on one critical question. Was it possible that Helen could have first killed her mother and then herself with a long rifle? The fatal bullet had traveled from a wound at the top of her head downward, which seemed physically impossible. The prosecution called Iris Deli Graf to the stand.
I'm a forensic specialist, and I was hired to look into a reconstruction of the events that happened when Helen Hargan died in the bathroom. One of the first things I do is I look to the autopsy. What do we know from the autopsy? That's fact beyond change. In this case, she had an entry wound through the bone at the top of her head and an exit in the lower part of the cranium going down into the right neck.
With that kind of wound, Graf didn't think it was likely that Helen shot herself.
Top of the head is usually a sign that something else is happening.
Someone else is in that room.
Certainly for a downward to the top of the head, yes.
Graf said she tested several scenarios and showed me her digital reconstructions of the crime scene.
This is a forensic animation, a virtual model that is a depiction of the data.
The jury was not allowed to see Graf's reconstructions in court, but they mostly challenged the idea that Helen died by suicide. Since the autopsy revealed the bullet entered the top of her head, Graf tested all the ways Helen could have pointed the rifle and still reached the trigger. In most scenarios, Helen's fingers couldn't reach.
Fully extended, we still need another 5 inches.
So she's 5 inches short of reaching the trigger if the gun was held at this angle. And based on my experience in covering a lot of these cases, I've never seen a suicide with a weapon, a rifle placed on someone's head by themselves like this. Have you?
Not with this particular trajectory.
But there was one scenario where Graf found Helen could have reached the trigger using her toe.
People have done that, use like their toe to engage the trigger.
That has been done.
Yes.
Okay, try to imagine this for a moment. In Graf's digital reconstruction, Helen is sitting on the toilet, leaning forward so that the top of her head is against the gun barrel. In that scenario, Helen could have used her toe to pull the trigger.
Yes, her legs are long enough that her toe could reach the trigger.
But what do you think of this scenario?
Basically, you're standing on your head to try to get to this position, which makes it very difficult to find the trigger. And the other thing is that you're leaning so far forward that your center of gravity is over the floor, not over the toilet seat.
Which you could fall down.
Exactly.
She conceded this scenario is technically possible, but Graf didn't think Helen killed herself.
Someone else has to engage the trigger.
So this is a homicide, not suicide, in your opinion?
This would be homicide.
Yet Graf's finding that Helen's legs were long enough to reach the trigger raised enough doubt that the defense made it part of their argument.
Only a producer of a movie could come up with this. And even then, I don't think an audience would even buy that, even in Hollywood.
Prosecutor Whitney Gregory was not convinced, and she didn't think anyone else would buy the toe trigger theory.
It's utterly nonsensical for several reasons.
The defense attorneys even discussed how Helen's socks could have prevented her from leaving prints on the trigger. I asked Prosecutor Tyler Bazilla about the theory.
I mean, I thought it was ridiculous. I'll tell you this, that in combination with them using the word framed, that Helen framed her sister, to me meant that they didn't have a defense at all. Because if you frame somebody, this isn't the way you do it.
But remember, all the defense needed to do was convince one juror that there was reasonable doubt that Megan Hargan was the murderer. For her part, Megan chose not to take the stand and defend herself. The jury deliberated on Thursday, March 24th, 2022, took off Friday, and returned a verdict that following Monday.
Guilty on all four charges. So first degree of Pamela, first degree of Helen, and then the two associated firearm, the commission of the felony charges.
And how did Megan react to the verdict?
At least for me as a prosecutor, I don't want to look over at that table. I think it's not very classy. I'm just sort of in the zone trying not to pass out.
Detective Brian Byerson, who had been working this case from the very beginning, was also in the courtroom.
There's some relief there when that verdict is read, but more so, there's a sense of, I think, weight lifted off of everybody. I know that it was very emotional for Ashley Hargan sitting in there listening to that.
The jury recommended two life sentences.
A McLean woman could be headed to prison for the rest of her life for killing her mother and her sister.
Jurors found Megan Hargan guilty of the murders and staging the crime scene to look like it was a murder-suicide.
But the saga over whether Megan Hargan killed her mother and sister wasn't over. Not yet. That argument about Helen using her toe on the trigger caused one juror to go rogue. And what she did next would put the verdict and the entire case in jeopardy. That's next time on the finale of Blood is Thicker. From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings. Judy Tigard is the executive producer of 48 Hours. Original reporting by 48 Hours producers Josh Yeager, Sarah Ely Hulse, Michelle Sagona, and Lauren White. Jamie Benson is the senior producer for Paramount Audio, and Mara Walls is the senior story editor. Recording assistance from Alan Pang and Marlon Polycarp. Special thanks to Paramount Podcast Vice President Megan Marcus and 48 Hours senior producer Peter Schweitzer. Blood is Thicker is produced by Sony Music Entertainment. It was written and produced by Alex Schumann. Our executive producers are Catherine St. Louis and Jonathan Hirsch. Our associate producer is Zoe Culkin. Theme and original music composed by Hansdale Shi. He also sound designed and mixed the episodes. We also use music by Blue Dot Sessions. Catherine Newhan is our fact checker. Our production managers are Tamika Balance-Kolasny and Samantha Allison. I'm Peter Van Sant. If you're enjoying the show, be sure to rate and review. It helps more people find it and hear our reporting. You can listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.